Okay, good morning, everyone. Today's daf is Baba Kama Daf Samech Gimel. We are holding very far into Samech Gimel Amud Aleph, 21 lines down from the top of the page, the Bais Ema. So just to review a little bit, previously the Gemara had been discussing what type of objects you need to pay Tashlume Kefel for, and the Gemara had suggested that the word kol in the Pasuk, the Pashtas al kol devar pesha, was a ribui to include every type of item. And the Gemara had asked, is it really true that kol is a ribui? We find in the context of Maaser Sheni that kol is not used as a ribui, but rather is used as a klal prat. So the Gemara was discussing that. The Gemara differentiated between bakol and kol, that by kol in the context of Maaser Sheni is beklal prat, and kol in the context of Tashlumei Kefel is used as a ribui. So the Gemara is going to get back into that discussion. And then as we turn the page onto Amud Beis, the Gemara is going to discuss different cases where you would have to pay Tashlumei Kefel, whether you'd have to pay in a regular case of Ganav, whether you'd have to pay in a case of Toin Tainus Ganav, whether you would have to pay in a case where you're Toin Tainus Avad, that you claim that the object was lost. So we'll get into that discussion on Samech Gimel Amud Beis. So let's begin with the Ve'i Bayis Ema. So the Gemara says here, 21 lines down again, Ve'i Bayis Ema, Kol Klalahu. Now the Gemara suggests that there's really no difference between bakol, which we have in the context of Maaser Sheni, and kol, which we have in the context of Tashlumei Kefel. Both of them are generally used to be a klal. Mihu kol dehacha ribuyehu. However, the kol in the context of Tashlumei Kefel, which is our discussion here in Baba Kama, is different. It deviates from the general rule. And for that reason, it's going to be used as a ribui and not as a klal. Now the question is, why is it different? So the Gemara explains, michti. Let's analyze the context of Tashlumei Kefel and see why the kol here might be different, why it would be used as a ribui and not as a klal uprat. Because k'tiv me'ikara klal uprat uklal. The Torah had already used language of klal uprat uklal in the discussion of Tashlumei Kefel, dichtiv, because the pasuk says in the beginning of the parsha, where it talks about the circumstances that give rise to a case of Tashlumei Kefel. It talks about ki yitain ish el re'ehu, when a person gives an object to his friend, that's ultimately where the situation could devolve into one of Tashlumei Kefel. And we assume that the psukim are to be understood as follows, that ki yitain ish el re'ehu is a klal, that the Torah says generally when a person gives an object to his friend, so that speaks very generally, that's a klal. Then kesef o kalim, the Torah then specifies what a person might give to his friend to wash. That might be kesef o kalim, it might be silver, or it might be types of vessels, and that's prat, that's referring to specific things. So far the Torah has spoken in terms of klal uprat, and then lishmor, when the Torah says that you give these objects to your friend to guard, hadar v'klal, that again speaks very generally about something that you would give to your friend to guard. So far the Torah has spoken already in a klal uprat uklal, and this is already in the earlier psukim in the parsha that speak first about when you give an object to your friend. And if it enters your mind, if you think that when the Torah then speaks about al kol devar pesha, al chamor, al seh, al salma, and everything, if you think that when the Torah comes back to speak about al kol devar pesha, that it's also speaking in terms of klal uprat, then nichtov rachmana lahani prati gabe ha'ech klal uprat. The Torah, when it's giving these new pratim, which you're telling me are to be understood as klal uprat uklal, it should have just included those same pratim earlier when the Torah spoke about ki yitain ish el re'ehu, because the Torah there was already engaged in a drasha of klal uprat uklal, and it specified kesef o kalim, silver or objects or utensils that you would give to your friend. So if it wanted to get back into the world of pratim, the Torah should have just included those pratim in the earlier context. Al kol devar pesha lamali, when the Torah then comes later to restate and say al kol devar pesha for any object that some sort of error, some sort of negligence may occur, and it specifies a bunch of additional objects, if the Torah wanted to use those for klal uprat, it would have just said it earlier. So why does the Torah go back and restate later al kol devar pesha lamali? Shma mina ribuyehu. It must be that the Torah is doing that for the purpose of darshaning beribui, to be generally inclusive of almost everything, not to be more specific and to darshan klal uprat. So in this Ibaisema, which we began with, the Gemara is going back on what it said earlier. Earlier, the Gemara had differentiated between Bakol and Kol and suggested that Kol generally is always a Ribui and Bakol is Beklal Prat. Now the Gemara is saying that you could even understand that Kol is also generally a Klal Prat. Just here, the circumstances are different. Here, Kol is going to be used as a Ribui. Why? Because the Pasuk already begins with Darshaning Klal Prat, and if it wanted to continue on Darshaning with Klal Prat, it would have just included all these additional examples, which would serve as Pratim in the earlier context. The fact that the Torah waits and restates it later, Al Kol Debar Pesha, Al Shor Al Chamor, Al Se Al Sama, Al Kol Aveda, it's clearly telling us that we should be Doresh everything, we should understand everything, we should expound everything in the form of Ribuya. So now it says the Gemara, Hashta Da Amarta Kol Ribua. Now that you're telling me that Al Kol Debar Pesha is a ribui, that we're using the word kol here to be a ribui, then kolhani prati lamali. Why do I need all the specific things that the Torah mentions? Why do I need shor and chamor and sal salma, which would seem to indicate that only things which are similar to these objects are going to be included if really kol is a ribui and we're going to include everything? So the Gemara explains that we need all of these pratim, we need all of these specific examples for various reasons. Cha de mi'ute karka. One of them is needed to exclude karka, which we had seen earlier, because karka are not metaltalin. Cha de meute avadim. One is to exclude slaves. Becha de meute shtaros. One is to exclude documents. And then salma is the meute davar she'eno misuyam. When the Torah discusses that you would pay tashlume kefer for a salma, for a shirt, that's coming to exclude anything which is not specific, anything where a person wouldn't have a sign over it, right? Rashi says here at the bottom of the page that salma is yesh la simanim, that a person's shirt, they have some way to identify it. They have some sort of signs or simanim to say, I know that my shirt is red, that it has stripes, that it has a little stain over here that I made from whatever happened, you know, in the corner. I can identify the shirt as being my own based on these simanim. And that, Rashi says, in the second Rashi, the bottom of the page, is the meute davar she'enu mesuyam, she'en the bailim, simen bo she'potr mikefel. That if you have an object which is not specific, a person doesn't have signs about a person, can't identify it, then it would be exempt from paying tashlum mikefel. And al kol aveda, the last prat that the Torah has in the context of tashlum mikefel, al kol aveda, for any object which would be lost, is the lichter Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. It comes for the statement of Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. The Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, because Rabbi Chiya bar Abba teaches us in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that atoin tainas ganav ba'aveda, let's say a person claims that an object was stolen from him, or that it was lost, mishalim tashlum mikefel, shneamar al kol aveda asher yomar. He would have to pay tashlum mikefel, because the pasuk says al kol aveda. So what exactly is going on here? Rashi explains, ba'aveda is motze aveda, shetoin nignivah hemeni la'achar shemitzasiya. The Torah tells us that we have a mitzvah of hashavas aveda, that if you find an object that your friend seems to have lost, you should bring it into your possession, and you should try to return it to him until a time, you know, when you're able to find him, you're able to track him down, and you're able to return his object. So what Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, is teaching us here is, let's say a person takes a lost object into their possession, and then they claim that it was stolen from them before they were able to return it to the rightful owner. It was stolen from them, but they're towing Tainas Ganav. They only claim that it was stolen from them, but that implies that what actually happened likely was that they were found to be the one who stole it. So in such a case, they would also have to pay Tashlume Kefel, because the Pasuk specifically says, Al Kol Aveda Asher Yomar, that the types of objects for which you'd have to pay Kefel include something which would be lost. And we don't really have a way to darshan that Pasuk other than to say, it comes to teach us that if somebody finds a lost object and then claims that it was stolen from them, and that's found to be false, they would have to pay Tashlume Kefel for it. So that essentially concludes the Gemara's discussion of these drashos, So what the Gemara had done in this Ibaisema that we began with is basically to say that really kol is generally a klal prat. Over here it's going to be used as a ribui because the Torah already had a discussion of klal prat. And once it's a ribui, why do we need all these specific examples? So these examples are used to exclude certain cases, or in some cases to include other cases. But just to review, to exclude land, to exclude slaves, to exclude something which is to exclude documents, to exclude something which the owner does not have signs about, and then lastly to include towing tainas ganav if somebody claims that the object was lost from him when it's an object that he found that was lost, and he's holding on to it in order to return to his friend. So in all of these cases, you'd either be excluded from paying tashlum mikefel or included, depending on the nature of the drasha, But that's why we need all these specifications. The Torah says, Al Kol Dvar Pesha, Al Shor HaChamor, to include or exclude all of these cases. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to go on to discuss the discussion that we had mentioned earlier about Toin Tanis Ganov, Ganov Atzmo, when a person claims that something was stolen from him, but it actually wasn't, he stole it himself, or when it was actually stolen, and also if a person claims that the object was lost, whether he would have to pay Tashlum Kefel in each of these cases. So the Gemara says here on the second line, Samach Gimel Amud Beis, Tnan Hasam, we have a Mishnah coming from the end of Masech the Baba Kama. The Mishnah says as follows, Heichan Pikdoni, let's say a person gives a Pikadon, he gives an object to a friend to watch as collateral, and then the person asks, where is my object? So the person who is supposed to be watching this object says, Amar Le Avad, he says, I lost the object, it's been lost, I have no idea where it is. So says the person who gave him the object, Mashbiach Ani, give me an oath, make a shvuah to me that the object was lost from you. The Amar Amen, and the person answers, Amen, I swear as you wish that this object was lost from me. V'ha'edim me'edim oto sha'achalo, and the Edim testify, two Edim are there to testify that this person who claims that it was lost really achalo, he really consumed it, he used it in some way, that it's gone. So mashalim es hakeren. In such a case, the person would have to pay for the principal, he'd have to pay for the value of the object that he claimed was lost, when in reality it's found that he consumed it, that he used it. And Rashi just fills in here, why is it that he only has to pay the principal, but he doesn't have to pay kefel? Is because the ain kefel ella betainas ganav. You would only have to pay kefel if you claim that it was stolen, and it's found that it wasn't stolen, you actually stole it yourself, or you used it in some way. But since this guy here, who used the object, he consumed the object, all he claimed was that it was stolen from him, so he'd only have to pay keren, he wouldn't have to pay kefel, because toin tanis avad, at least we're assuming at this point, would not have to pay kefel. Now, hoda al pi atzmo, mishalim keren v'chomesh v'ashem. If he admits on his own, throughout a shvuah, but on his own volition, he admits that he used the object and consumed it, then in such a case, he would have to pay keren v'chomesh v'ashem. He would have to pay the principal of the object, he would have to pay an additional fifth, and he would also have to bring a korban asham. And Rashi explains that these things are inextricably linked, that you would always have a chomesh and asham together, you would never have one of them separately. And also, even though we don't necessarily know that you need a shvuah in this context by shvuas hapikadon, Rashi tells us that it's learned out from another context. Right? Rashi tells us here in the Rashi, hoda ma'atma mashalim keren v'chomesh v'asham, starting in the middle, da'af al pi de'lo kasav ba'yi parsha hoda, kasav rachmana ba'asham gezel hager v'parshas nasav v'izvadu et chatatam. That even though in the context of shvuas hapikadon, it doesn't necessarily say that you would only pay keren v'chomesh v'asham if you admit on your own, nonetheless, the Torah does tell that in the context of Gezel Hager. If you steal something from a convert who doesn't have any family and presumably doesn't have any inheritors, there the Torah specifies that you would only pay Keren V'chomesh V'asham if you admit under your own volition. And the same thing holds true when it comes to Shvuas HaPikadon. So those are the cases that the Mishnah really that we're bringing in the Gemara here speaks about. If a person says the object was lost and then Edim testify that really he consumed it, you would just have to pay principal. But if he were to admit on his own, he would have to pay Keren V'chomesh V'asham. Now the Gemara continues with a different case. Heichan Pikdoni, let's say the person asks, where is my collateral, where is my object that I gave you to watch? And Amar Lo Nignav, and he says, it was stolen from me. Mashbiach Ani V'Amar Amin. If the person whose object it was says, swear to me that it was stolen, and the person who was holding on to the object says, Amen, I swear that it was stolen from me. V'Aedim Me'edim Oto Shegnavo. And the Edim, the two Edim who are there, testify that this person actually stole it himself. Mishalim Tashlumei Kefel, then he would have to pay Tashlumei Kefel. So why is this different? Because as Rashi had mentioned, there is no responsibility to pay Kefel when it comes to Tainas Avad. There's only a responsibility to pay Tashlumei Kefel when it comes to Tainas Ganav. So that's why, unlike in the earlier case where a person claimed that it was lost, he only had to pay the principal, here where the person is claiming that it was stolen, he would have to pay double, he would have to pay Tashlumei Kefel. Hoda Me'atmo, Mishalim Keren V'chomesh V'asham. And if he admitted on his own that it was stolen or that he stole it, then he would have to pay Keren V'chomesh V'asham. He would have to pay the principal an additional fifth, and he would have to bring an Asham Gezelos. So basically the same as a case where he claimed that it was lost, but then he testifies on his own, he admits on his own, because in both cases, he's admitting on his own, so the din is not going to change. Tosus here just points out something interesting. At the top of the page, in the first case, we had mentioned that if a person claims the object was lost from him, and then the Edom testify that he consumed it, that he ate it in some way. Whereas the second case, we said the person claims that it was stolen from him, and the Edom testified that it was stolen. So Tosus just points out the distinction, the difference between whether the Edom are testifying that he consumed it, or whether the Edom are testifying that it was stolen. And he points out, Achlo naka lerabuta. Then in the first case, where the person claims that the object was lost from him, there the Edom are specifically testifying that the object was consumed, that this person used it in some way. Lerabusa, that's a bigger chiddush. It's coming to teach us a more broader principle, that afal pi she'abdo mina olam pater mina kefel betainas avad. That even though this person consumed the object, completely used it, and it's no longer in existence in the world, he's still pater from paying kefel. He still doesn't have to pay a double payment, because his initial claim was not that the object was stolen. His initial claim was that the object was lost, tainas avad. And we assume that betainas avad, if somebody claims that something was lost from him, they would not have to pay kefel no matter what. Veseifa nakat shenignevu lerabusa, da'afal pishehu be'en chayav kefel. And in the second case, where a person is towing tainas ganav, where a person claims that the object was stolen from him, there the Edom are testifying that actually this guy himself stole it, but not that this guy ate it or consumed it in any way. All the Edom are testifying is that he stole it. And that, says Tosos, is again the Rabusa. It's teaching us a big chiddush, that even though the object is still be'en, it's still in the world, he didn't consume it, it's still here, still in such a case, you have to pay kefel, kemen shetoin tainas ganav. So Tosos is just pointing out that it doesn't really matter what you did with the object. It doesn't matter what the Edom are testifying that you did. All that really matters at the end of the day is the initial claim that you made. So you may have used the object in a more severe way, a more extreme way, in a way which you completely removed it from the world, but even so, you won't be chayv to pay kefel, you won't be chayv to pay a double payment if your initial claim was that the object was lost. And even if the object is still existent in the world, you may have to pay kefel, you may have to pay a double payment if your initial claim was that the object was stolen. So Tosfos just points out that discrepancy between the cases in this Mishnah that the Gemara brings here, but nonetheless, that's the Mishnah. And the Gemara is now going to delve further into some of the laws, some of the dinim that were taught in the Mishnah, and try to explain where they're based from, what the source is for these dinim. So, Katani Miha, Betoin Tanis Ganav, the Mishalim Tashlume Kefel. What emerges clearly from this Mishnah is that if a person is towing Tainas Ganav, if a person claims that an object was stolen from him, and then it's found that he really stole it, he would have to pay kefel in such a case. So that we saw from the second case in the Mishnah, about betoin tainas avad lo mishalem tashlumei kefel. But if a person just claims that the object was lost, he would not have to pay tashlumei kefel if it's found that he stole it, or even that he consumed it and removed it from the world. Because towing tainas avad, as Rashi had said, is not responsible to pay tashlumei kefel, and that we saw from the beginning of the Mishnah. And then the Gemara just continues with another thing that emerges from this Mishnah, and that is, va'afilu towing tainas ganav, even a person who's towing tainas ganav, even a person who claims that an object was stolen from him, he's only responsible to pay kefel b'shvua. B'shvua hu d'mishalam tashlumei kefel. He would only have to pay kefel through an oath if he makes an oath that it was really stolen from him. And then Edom testify that he actually stole it. Only then would he have to pay tashlumei kefel. Aval shelo b'shvua eino mishalam tashlumei kefel. But if he never swore that it was stolen from him, then even if Edom come and testify that he himself stole it, he would not have to pay tashlumei kefel. And that was also seen in the second case of the Mishnah. So the Gemara wants to know, mino hani mili. How do I know that that's true? How do I know both that only a towing tainas ganav, but only somebody who claims that an object was stolen from him would have to pay kefel, but not somebody who claims that an object was lost from him, and that a person who claims that an object was stolen from him, how do I know that he would only be responsible to pay kefel if he claimed that it was stolen from him, b'shvua, if he actually made an oath that it was stolen from him? So the Gemara says, d'tana rabbanan, because we have the following braisa, which teaches us these dinim. The braisa quotes from a pasuk, imimatzea ganav, in the context of tashlumei kefel, in the context of a person paying double for an object that was stolen, the pasuk tells us, imimatzea ganav, if the thief is found. And the Braisa assumes that that's betoin tainas ganav akatum medaber. The Braisa assumes that that pasuk is talking about somebody who claims that an object was stolen from him, and later it's found that he stole it. So that's a little bit counterintuitive, because the pasuk seems to say imi matzea ganav, if the thief is found. That seems to assume that there's a real thief, that the thief was not the person who was watching the object, but actually that the object was stolen from the guy, and the thief who stole it from the person watching it is actually found. And so that's exactly the point that Gemara is going to pick up on right now. Ata omer betoin tainas ganav, o eino ela beganav atzmo. You think the pasuk is talking about a situation where a person is watching an object, he claims that it was stolen, and then it's found that he stole it? Isn't it more likely that it's speaking about a case of a ganav atzma, of a case where an actual thief stole it from the person watching it, and then that thief is found? That seems to be more literal. That seems to be more true to what the pasuk is talking about. Imi matzea ganav, that seems to be talking about a real thief who stole it from the person watching it, and not where the person watching it himself stole it. So how do we address that seeming, not inconsistency, but what would seem to be less intuitive? How do we understand these pasukim? So the Braisa explains, k'shehu omer im lo yimatzea ganav, when the next pasuk says, im lo yimatzea ganav, if the thief is not found, it emerges clearly that it's betoin tainas ganav hakatuv medaber. The Bachir adds in havi omer, so we can learn from the second pasuk, which says im lo yimatzea ganav, that clearly the pasukim are talking about betoin tainas ganav hakatuv medaber. So again, just to clarify what this Braisa just said, the Braisa said that if the thief is found, you have to pay tashlimei kefal, and that's referring to a case of toin tainas ganav, where one claims that it was stolen from him, but really he's found to be the thief. And the Gemara says that doesn't seem to make sense. It seems to be more likely that this pasuk is referring to a case where an actual thief stole it from the guy who's watching the object. And the Gemara says, no, we can prove from the second pasuk, because the second pasuk says very clearly, im lo yimatzea ganav, if the thief is not found. Thus, it must be that the thief is the person who was watching the object, that he actually stole it himself. And that shows us that even the original pasuk, even the first pasuk, which said, imi matzea ganav, where the thief is found, that's referring to where the person watching the object himself was the one who stole it. Now, the problem with that, Rashi points out here, is that that would mean we have two psukim talking about the same thing. We have two psukim talking about toin tainas ganav. Both the pasuk of imi matzea ganav and the pasuk of im lo yimatzea ganav are both talking about a case where the person watching the object claims that it was stolen, but really he stole it himself. And the Gemara is going to address why we need these two psukim later on. Yeah, do we have a... So it's a little bit unclear in the literal meaning of the pasuk. Rashi says over here, right? K'sheu omer im lo yimatzea ganav. It's about the end of the top third in Rashi. Ulekame mokminan la betoin tanis ganav shenimtzehu be'atzmo ganav. The Gemara later is going to clarify how that's implicit in the pasuk, that the person who claims it was stolen really stole it himself. But I guess we'll just try to address it for now. The idea is, im lo yimatze, it's not, there, the ganav isn't really found. A thief is not found, and therefore the person's claim was not correct. He claimed that it was stolen from him, but we didn't actually find a thief. We didn't actually find evidence to support what he said. And therefore it must be that what he claimed was incorrect. Nobody stole it from him. Really, he stole it himself. So that's what the Gemara is assuming. But the Gemara is going to address that a little bit later in this next braisa and try to clarify how we know that the second pasuk, as you mentioned, im lo yimatzea ganav, that's referring to toin tainas ganav. So still a little bit unclear. That's sort of the Rashi Prakim, but the Gemara is going to delve into that further. It's going to prove that that's talking about betoin tainas ganav. It's also going to ask why we need two psukim, both of which are about toin tainas ganav. So that's the first braisa. Both psukim are referring to toin tainas ganav, and you would have to pay kefal. Now we have a second braisa, which also discusses these psukim and these laws, but it's slightly different. Tanya idach, imi matzea ganav, beganav atzma hakatu medaber. The second braisa says that that first pasuk, imi matzea ganav, if the thief is found, is referring to a case where we actually find the thief himself. So ask the Gemara, ata omer beganav atzmo, o eino ela betoin tainas ganav. Do you think that first pasuk is talking about a case of a real thief, where we find the thief who stole the object? Or is it really talking about toin tainas ganav, where a person claims that it was stolen, but really he stole it himself? So kshehu omer im lo yimatzea ganav, hare toin tainas ganav amur. When the second pasuk comes along and says im lo yimatze aganav, if the thief is not found, that's clearly talking about betoyin tainas ganav, where a person claims it was stolen but it's not. Again, how is that clear? So we just spoke about that, but the Gemara is going to elucidate further shortly. So hamani mekayim imatze aganav. And therefore, how should I understand the first pasuk? If the second pasuk is talking about toin tainas ganav, where the person claims it was stolen, but really he stole it, then how do I understand the first pasuk? The ganav atzmo hakatov medaber. The first pasuk has to be talking about a case where the thief himself is found, where a real thief stole it. So let's just pause for 1 second. All we did just now was we had two braisas. One braisa said that really both psukim, imi matzei aganav, im lo imatzei aganav, are talking about betoyin tainas ganav, where a person claims it was stolen, but really it was not. He is found to be the thief, and the Gemara is going to address why we need both of those psukim. The second braisa holds a little bit more strict to the literal meaning, that the first pasuk is talking about where we find the real thief, imi matzei aganav, and the second pasuk is talking about im lo imatzei aganav, where the person is toyin tainas ganav. So now the Gemara is going to address, I believe that was Moshe's voice that I heard over there, Moshe's question. Tekule alma mihas im lo yimatzei aganav betoyin tainas ganav ksiv. Everybody agrees that the second pasuk, im lo yimatzei aganav, is talking about betoyin tainas ganav hakas medaber. It's talking about a case where a person claims it was stolen from him, and it's really found that he was the thief. That both of the braisas agreed about. So my mashma, how is that clear in the pasuk? How is that explicit that im lo yimatzei aganav is referring to a case of toin tainas ganav? So Amar Rava, Rava is going to explain the pasukim for us. Im lo yimatzei, when the pasuk says im lo yimatzei, if it's not found, what that means is im lo yimatzei kemashe amar, it's not found as the person said, as he claimed that it was stolen from him, ela shehu atzmo genavo, rather it's found that he himself stole it, yishalem shenayim. Then he has to pay kefel. So that's how we know that the second pasuk, im lo yimatzei aganav, has to be referring to toin tainas ganav. Because it was not found, which means it was not found as he claimed, there was not found to be a real thief. Rather, elahu atzmo ganavo, he himself stole it. Betoin tainas ganav, and then he's found to be the thief himself. So in such a case, he would have to pay shnayim. So that's how these two braises differ. That's how both braises agree that the second pasuk, im lo yimatzei aganav, is talking about betoyin tainas ganav. And then they just disagree whether the first pasuk, im lo yimatzei aganav, is talking about ganav atzmo, which is the second braise, or toyin tainas ganav, which is the first braise. Okay, so to some degree, the Gemara has explained now what it wanted to prove. Because remember, we quoted the Mishnah, and we said there were two things that emerged from the Mishnah. That first of all, toyin tainas ganav has to pay tashlume kefel, and second of all, that he only has to pay tashlume kefel b'shvua. So we've just proved that according to both braisas, a toyin tainas ganav has to pay tashlume kefel. That's from the pasuk of im lo yimatzei aganav for sure. And now the Gemara wants to know, what about the second part of that limud? What about the second thing that emerged from the Mishnah, uminolan de b'shvua? How do I know that someone who's toyin tainas ganav only has to pay tashlume kefel if he first makes an oath that the object was stolen from him? So how do I know that? Detanya v'nikrav balabayis elha Elohim l'shvua. The pasuk says that if the thief is not found, then the person who's watching the object has to approach Ha Elohim. We don't have to say Ha Elohim here because that means that he has to approach the judge. And that means Lishvua. He has to approach the judge in order to make a shvua, to make an oath that the object was stolen from him. So he's claiming that the object was stolen from him. He'll approach the judge and make an oath that it was stolen from him. And that, which is 1 second. And then if it's found that he lied, that it was not stolen from him, but he stole it himself, then he'll pay tashlume kefel. Yeah, I heard a question. This v'nikrav is in the second pasuk. This is in the context. So let's just go back for a second. There are three psukim basically in the context of tashlume kefel. The first pasuk, which is Shmos Chaf Beis pasuk Vav, says ki tein ish el re'eu kesef al kelim lishmor ve'gunav mi beis ha'ish mimatzei aganav yishalem shnayim. If a person gives something to his friend to watch and the object is stolen from him, he has to pay double. The very next pasuk, Shmos Chav Beis pasuk Zion, says im lo yimatzei aganav v'nikrav balabayis el ha'aluim im lo shalach yado b'mleches re'eu. If the thief is not found, then the person watching the object has to come in front of the judge. The Gemara is darshaning that to mean that he has to come in front of the judge to swear. If it's true that he didn't use the object, if he's claiming that he didn't use it, but rather it was stolen from him, or it was lost from him, or some other explanation, he would have to come in front. And then the next pasuk, the third pasuk in the parsha, Shmos, Chav Beis, Ches, is the pasuk we were speaking about. And Amar Aleph, Al Kol Bar Pesh, Al Shor, Al Hamor, Al Sal Sama, elucidating all the different types of objects that would be subject to payment of Tashlumei Kefa. Interesting. I think the way I understood it is that Imloi Matse is the beginning of the Pasuk, but we don't actually find Shehu Atzma Ganavo until later, right? So the way the Pasuk would be understood is Imloi Matse Aganav. If it's not found like he said, then all of these other things have to happen, that we have to bring him in front of the court, and he has to make an oath, and then we bring Edim to prove whether he's right or wrong. And we find that he actually stole it, only then would he have to pay Tashlumei Kefa. But I don't think, based on your question, and I think you're absolutely correct, we can't really understand Im lo yimatse kemashe amar ela shehu atzmo gnavo right away. It's only until later, only once we go through this process, can we find conclusively that he's the one who stole it and that what he claimed that somebody stole it from him was incorrect. Does that make sense? I think that's what you'd have to say, because if we know conclusively, like you're saying, what's that? Yeah, it makes the whole sequence very difficult. Definitely agree. I think that's what you'd have to say to explain Im lo yimatse. It can't be that right away, before v'nikra v'balabayis el ha'olim im lo shalach edo b'melech sereyu, that right away we already know that he was lying and that he really stole it and that he's obligated to pay double, because then this whole process would be unnecessary. So it would have to be that it's initially not found like he said, meaning we don't find a thief, and then once we go through this whole process, it's found shehu atzmo genavo. That's where the pasuk would then conclude, Yeshalem Shinaim Lere'ehu, which is at the end of pasuk, Shmos Chav Be'ez Pasuk Ches. So I think that's how we'd have to understand it. But so right now the Gemara is assuming that you would come in front of the judge, Lishvua, to make an oath. So ask the Gemara, Ata Omer Lishvua, O Enu El Aladin. Is it saying that the person has to come to make an oath that this object was stolen from him? Maybe it's really just saying that he has to come to pay. Right? Rashi says here, Ladin means Lepiron, that he'd have to come and pay for the object that was stolen from him. So the Gemara says, no, I know that it must be saying he has to come in front of the judge to make an oath. How do I know that? Because ne'emar shlichus yad demata, ve'ne'emar shlichus yad demala. The Torah speaks about a case where a person uses the object that he's supposed to be watching for his friend in the two different contexts of shomrim. One is by a shomer chinam, a person who's watching but he's unpaid to watch this object, and one is said by a shomer sachar. One is said by a person who's watching an object for pay. And both of those cases, it says, im lo shalach yado b'melech sereihu, if he did not use the object of his friend. And so the Gemara says, ma lo halam l'shvua, af kam l'shvua. Just like in the second context, by a shomer sachar, a paid watchman, it says explicitly that he needs to make an oath. Right? Rashi says here, shlichus yad lemata b'shomer sachar, shvuas Hashem tiyeh bein shenayim. It says explicitly by a paid watchman that he has to make an oath. And since in both contexts, a shomer sachar and a shomer chinam, it talks about the person using the object, then just like by a shomer sachar, you would only pay tashlumei kefel if you made an oath, so too by a shomer chinam, you would only pay tashlumei kefel if you make an oath. So now the Gemara wants to get back into these two different braises that we saw. Bishlama lemad omer char beganav, v'char betoin tainis ganav, hainu dichtiv trei kray, right? This is the question that we were alluding to before. But according to the second brisa, which says Im Yimatse Aganav is talking about a real ganav, and Im Lo Yimatse Aganav is talking about Toin Tanis Ganav, so it makes sense that you would need both psukim because they're talking about two different things. Elamad Amar Tavayir B'Toin Tanis Ganav Trei Kray Lamali. According to the first brisa, which said that both psukim Im Yimatse Aganav and Im Lo Yimatse Aganav are talking about Toin Tanis Ganav, why do I need two psukim? So answers the Gemara Amri Chad Lemeuti Tainas Avad. One of them is to exclude a case where a person says that the object was lost from him. Because remember, the Mishnah that we started with, that started this whole discussion, said that if a person is toin tainas avad, he claims that an object was lost from him, and then it's found that he actually lied, that he used it or consumed it in some way, he would only have to pay the principal, he'd only have to pay keren, but he would not have to pay tashlumei kefel. So according to the first brisa, which uses both psukim for toin tainas ganav, the exclusion of Toin Tanis Avad, one who claims an object was lost from him, comes from that second pasuk. Ulamada omer chad veganav v'chad betoin tanis ganav v'lo miyatir l'miyuti tanis avay minale. According to the second brisa, which used one pasuk for a real thief and one pasuk for toin tanis ganav, now he doesn't have a pasuk left over to use to exclude tanis avad. He doesn't have a pasuk left over to exclude a case where a person claims that the object was lost from him. So how does he know that a person who claims the object was lost from him wouldn't have to pay kefel? So the Gemara answers, miganav haganav. He uses the extra hey in the word ganav, that when we say a person claims that an object was stolen from him, the Torah says, yimimatsei haganav. So haganav comes to first include a case where the object was actually stolen, and then second, to exclude a case where you claim that it was lost from you. Okay. Ulamad amar tavayu betoin tanis ganav, demiyele toin tanis avhad, ganav haganav maidarish bey. Well, now let's follow the logic back. According to the first brisa, which used both psukim for toin tainas ganav, and then we asked, why do you need both psukim? So we said, really, one of the psukim is coming to exclude tainas avad, then what does he use the extra limud, the extra hay of ganav hagana for? He no longer needs it for excluding toin tainas avad, like the author of the second brisa needed it, and therefore, what does he use it for? So amr lecha mi baile lichter bichia bar abba amr rabbi yochanan. The author of the first brisa would tell you that that extra hay is needed for the drasha, for the limud, for the teaching of Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan. The Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan hatoin tainas ganav bepikadon mishalim tashlumei kefel. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan had taught us, and we saw this at the end of the daf yesterday, the bottom of Samach Beis Amud Beis, that if somebody claims an object was stolen from him and it's actually found that he stole it, he would have to pay tashlumei kefel, which we have just been discussing. And the Chiddush of Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan is also that Tava Humachar Meshalim Tashlume Arba VeChamisha. If you claim that the object was stolen from you, but really it was found that you stole it, and not only was it found that you stole it, but you also slaughtered it or sold it, you would have to pay Arba VeChamisha. You would have to pay the payments of 4 and 5 times for a shor and a seh. That's what you would use the extra hay for. Okay, so now the Gemara wonders, well then, l'man de'amar chad beganav, v'chad betoin tainas ganav, t'hai ganav haganav, afke l'miyutei tainas avad. Well now, according to the author of the second brisa, who said one pasuk was used for a thief himself, and one pasuk was used for a case where a person claimed it was stolen from him, but then it was found that he stole. And he used the extra hey in ganav haganav to exclude a case where a person claimed that the object was lost, then he no longer has any psukim left over to darshan. So the Rabbi Chiya bar Abba minale. How does he know this statement of Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Abba Rabbi Yochanan, that even one who claims an object was stolen from him would be subject to the payments of 4 and 5 times? So the Gemara is going to say, Amar lecha hekeshahu ve'in meshivin al hekesha. The author of the second brisa would tell you that the din of Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Abba Rabbi Yochanan, that a person who claims an object was stolen from him, and then shechs it, really he stole it, and he shechted it or sold it, that he would have to pay 4 or 5 times, that comes from a hekesh, and ve'ein meshivin al hekesha. You can't refute a hekesh, you can't refuse a comparison between two things, and therefore, Rashi just points out, why does the Gemara say, ve'ein meshivin al hekesha, that you can't refute a comparison, you can't refute a hekesh? It seems like the Gemara is suggesting that there is some basis on which to refute this hekesh. So Rashi says, yeah, there is some basis to refute the hekesh. So let's just clarify, what is the hekesh? The hekesh is that someone who claims an object was stolen from him is written right next to a case where an object was actually stolen from him, right? The author of the second brisa holds that imi matzei aganav is referring to a case where the object was actually stolen. Im lo yimatzei aganav is referring to a case where the person claimed it was stolen, but really he stole it himself. And we can make a hekesh between these two cases. Just like in the first case, imi matzei aganav, if there's a real thief, he would be obligated to pay 4 or 5 times if he steals the object and then shechs it or sells it. So too, one who only claims that an object was stolen from him, but really he stole it himself, would also have to pay 4 or 5 times if he shechted it or sold it. Now, what's the pircha? What's the potential question or refutation that we can make of this hekesh? Just 1 second. Rashi says, Malaganav atzmo sheken chayev kefel below shvua, tomar betoin tainas ganav shetzarech shvua. That we could refute this comparison and say, how can you compare the two if a thief has to pay double payment, even without an oath, but one who claims tainas ganav, one who claims that an object was stolen from him, only has to pay kefel, only would have to pay 2 times if he made a shvuah, which is what the Gemara just clarified. So because there's the difference whether they're obligated a shvuah before they'd be obligated to pay or not, maybe we could refute the Hekesh. And that's why the Gemara preempted this question, it bevorned this question. I mean, made sure we wouldn't ask this because it said, Ein Meshivin al Hekesh, you can't ask Akasha, you can't try to refute a comparison. Yeah, I'm sorry, what was the question? Right. Right. So I was actually wondering that also. Meaning what Moshe is raising is Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Amri Yochanan is not agreed upon according to everybody. And that was the Gemara's discussion yesterday at the beginning, right after the Mishnah, at the beginning of the Perek, whether or not we can support Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Amri Yochanan or whether we cannot support him. But it seems to be only a Das Yachid. So if we're pressed, we want to know, how do I know this din of Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Amri Yochanan? Why not just say that really I don't hold that? Because I'm not bound to hold that. I don't need to have a pasuk to teach me that din. So I don't know, certainly something the Gemara could have said. I thought you were going to go another direction, which is I think whether or not you can be meshiv ala hekesh, I could be wrong. I thought that was also subject to a machlokas. So we're going to work so hard to find a way to hold of the din of Rabbi Chiya bar Abba and Rabbi Yochanan, so much so that we're going to base it on something which maybe not everybody holds of. Why not just say that really I don't hold of Rabbi Chiya bar Abba and Rabbi Yochanan? So yeah, I 100% agree. I think that would certainly be a possibility. For whatever reason, the Gemara takes this avenue though instead. So let's just continue on a little bit further here. Bishlam elamanda omer chad beganav echad betomei tanis ganav shapir. Elamanda omer tarayu betomei tanis ganav ganav atzmo minole. So Gemara says, it works out really well according to the second brisa, which used the first pasuk, im yimatzeh ganav, for a real thief. And the second pasuk, im lo yimatzeh ganav, for a person who claims the object was stolen from him, but it's found that really he stole it. That's great because he covers both cases. He covers a case of ganav and he covers a case of tomei tanis ganav. But according to the Manda Amar, who says that both psukim are used for a case of toin tanis ganav, a case where a person claims the object was stolen from him, but really it's found that he stole it, then how does he know the most basic elemental case? How does he know a case of a ganav atzma? How does he know a case where a person actually stole an object, and we find the thief, that he'd be obligated to pay tashlumi kefal, he'd be obligated to pay a double payment? And the Gemara says, "V'chi tema." If you want to say that the source for that is "leisi b'kal v'chomer mitoin tainis ganav," if you want to say that it can be derived through a kal v'chomer from a case of toin tainis ganav, where you would say if a person who only claims that an object was stolen from him, but really it's found that he stole it himself, is obligated to pay tashlumei kefal, then all the more so, someone who never claimed that it was stolen from him, but actually was just a regular thief, just came along and stole it, it's obvious that he would also have to pay tashlumei kefal. Gemara seems to say, okay, that would be a fine kal v'chomer, but dayo laba min adin lios kanidon mala halen b'shvua afkan b'shvua. If we're only going to learn a ganav through a kal v'chomer from toin tanis ganav, then the details of a thief, of a ganav, should be limited in the same way that the details of a toin tanis ganav are limited. That just like we said, as we said before, that a person who's toin tanis ganav would only have to pay tashlumei kefal if he first made an oath that somebody stole it from him, and then it was found that that was false. So too, a thief would only have to pay tashlumei kefal if he first made an oath. I'm not even sure what the oath would be that he made. I guess if he swore that he didn't steal it, and then it's found that really he did steal it. But the Gemara assumes that that's not true, that a ganav has to pay kefal even if he never made a prior oath. So if we were to learn the source for a real thief, a ganav, according to this first brisa, if we were to learn that, b'kal v'chomer from toin tanis ganav, then we would not know that he's obligated to pay kefal even without a shvuah. The Gemara answers, the source for the case of Ganav, according to the first brisa, comes Nafgalei Midatana de Bechizkia. Really, we don't need this Kal v'chomer. We can learn the din of a Ganav paying kefel from the statement of Chizkia. The Tana de Bechizkia, Yomar Shor Ugneva Behakol Baklau. Chizkia is Doresh the Psukim. He expounds on the Psukim to be talking about a thief himself. And he says that the Torah could just say that the person stole a shore, stole an ox, and I would know that basically all objects, either a shore or gneva, anything that a person might steal, would be included in the details, in the dinim, in the laws of thieves, of stealing. And where it says, well, ilukach, if all I said was shore, if all I said was an ox and general gneva, Hayiti Omer Ma Pra Mefurash Karav Legabe Mizbeach Avko Karav Legabe Mizbeach. The Gemara says that if all I knew was an ox and just generally something that's stolen, I would think that the only objects which are subject to Tashlume Kefel, where a person would have to pay double if he stole them, are things which are offered on the Mizbeach. And Ma Yesh Techalahavi, what other objects could be included in the category of things which are brought on the Mizbeach? Se, a sheep. And then when the Torah then comes along and says, Ksheu Omer Se, Hare Se Amur, when the Torah specifies that a sheep is subject to these laws, then I no longer need this whole understanding of something which is brought on the Mizbeach, which would tell me to include a sheep, because it's explicit in the Torah that I need to pay kefel if a sheep is stolen. So I don't need to derive it on my own based on the similarities to a shore, on the similarities to an ox, which is brought on the Mizbeach. So once the Torah tells me, se, hare se amur, I know that a sheep is subject to the payment of tashlumei kefel, hamani mekayim gneva, the rabos kol davar. And therefore, when the Torah says generally that something which is stolen leads to an obligation to pay kefel, I can include all objects in that responsibility. So we'll just continue on, I guess, a little bit. Yomar shor se ugneva v'akol baklau. Why doesn't the Torah just say an ox and a sheep and something which is stolen? That would seemingly include all objects. So the Gemara says, "Ilu kach hayiti omer ma pra mefurash davar hakadosh bebechora, af kol davar hakadosh bebechora." If all I knew was an ox, a sheep, and objects generally which are stolen, I would think that the only objects which are included in these laws are things which are subject to kedushas bechora, things which are subject to the holiness of the firstborn. And ask the Gemara, "Ma yesh lecha lahavi chamor? What could you include in that category of things which are kadosh bebechora, which have the holiness of the Bechor?" That would include also a donkey. And therefore, Kshu Omer Chamor, Hare Chamor Amur, when the Torah restates and says even a donkey is included in these laws, then I don't need this expansion of things which are holy, which are Kadosh B'Bechor, because it's explicit that a donkey is included in these laws. Hamani Mekayim Gneva, the Rabos Kol Davar. And therefore, what do I learn from the use of the general term of something which is stolen? That includes all objects. And we'll just conclude with the next limud, Yomar Shor B'Chamor Se Ugneva V'Akol B'Klau. I could just speak generally about an ox and a donkey and a sheep and something which is stolen, and everything would be included. And the Gemara says, "Ilu kach hayiti yomer ma pra mefurash balechayim af kol balechayim." If those were the things the Torah specified, I would think that only animals are included in these laws. Well, if animals are included, then ma yesh lecha l'chavi, what else could be included? Shar balechayim, I could include all other animals. Says the Gemara, Kshu Omer Chayim, Hare Chayim Amur. Or the Masorah Sashash changes the gear here to Hare Balei Chayim Amur. When the Torah then specifies that something which is Chayim, something which is living, is included in these objects of in these laws of things which are stolen, then all animals are already included. Hamani Mekayim Gneva, the Rabos Kol Davar. And therefore, what do I use the term Gneva to tell me? That tells me to include all objects in these laws. And so based on this teaching of Tana de Beit Hizkiya, I now know that a ganav himself would also be included in the dinim of Tashlumei Kefel, according to the author of the first braisa. Okay, Yashar Koach, we'll hold it over here.